Humbly offer my loved Bhagwan's lotus feet, and dear listeners, I welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series, A Triune Pilgrimage. This is Prem, and it gives me great pleasure to join you again on this series where we meet week after week to go through the verses of the Bhagavad Gita. We are in the 9th chapter. We are pretty much in the middle of the 9th chapter, and as always, we'll begin with a short summary of what we covered last time, because all of that is in context of what we will be going through this week as well. We covered three verses, verse number 13, 14 and 15 of the 9th chapter. The 13th shloka is a contrast to what Krishna had described in the 12th one. The 12th verse, he had described people who get deluded into pursuing vain ambitions, vain dreams, and put in vain efforts. We had discussed how that was the path of avidya maya. In the 13th, Krishna spoke about those that are also in maya but are on the road to free themselves from that delusion. And he had said, Mam daivim prakritim ashritaha, taking refuge in my divine nature. The people in the 12th verse were described as those who resort to asurim rakshasim prakriti. And that is the contrast. Here he says, Mam devim prakritim ashritaha. And the point is, basic goodness, not wishing to harm anybody, hurt anybody, if possible, to be of use to others. That basic good nature, Swami says, is the starting point for any spiritual endeavor. It could be any path that you choose to take, but the foundation for that is basic goodness. Without that, there is no spirituality, there is no spiritual progress. He then says in that same verse that they worship me with one-pointedness. How do they worship him with one-pointedness? Nyatva bhutadin avyayam. Knowing me as the unchanging source of all, they worship me with one-pointedness. And we discussed how when Krishna says knowing me, it does not literally mean knowing, because that knowing or jnana is different. Here when he says jnatva, it is a reference to faith, right? It is a, as we have been speaking about this term, it is paroksha jnana. It is knowledge based on others' experience. That is what we refer to as faith. I have not seen it myself, but I believe and I have faith in this fact. The fact that is, he is bhutadim avyayam. He is the source of all beings, but at the same time, he is changeless. Avyayam, a word that we keep coming across many, many times. We will be coming across that word in one of the shlokas we discussed today as well. In the 14th verse, he further describes these people as satatam kirtayanto mam. They always glorify me. They always are preoccupied with singing my glories. Satatam kirtayanto mam. Then he says, yatantaha cha dridavrtaha. They are striving and firm in their vows. Namasyantaha cha mam bhaktya. And they prostrate before me with devotion. We spoke of the significance of Krishna specifically saying namasyantaha. When you know that you and he are one, it does not mean that you give up the attitude of humility, because that is the importance. That humility, that submission is the bedrock of devotion. And here Krishna is speaking about the path of devotion. That's why he says, namasyantaha cha mam bhaktya. They have that attitude of devotion. They have the attitude of humility. That is something that defines these people that Krishna is speaking about. Then he says, Nitya Yuktaha Upasate. They worship me with steadfastness. It is not a flash in the pan, as we said. Something beautiful happens, something overwhelming happens, and then we are carried away by that. And then that enthusiasm fades away. That is not the nature of the people that he is describing here. Nitya Yuktaha. They are constantly fixed on this upasate, and they worship me with that one-pointedness, with that steadiness. In the 15th shloka, he says, not just devotees, people who perform all kinds of worship reach me, right? To love the Lord, to submit yourself to the Lord is only one of the pathways that we call as the path of bhakti. But there are any number of other paths. When we say upasana, we've spoken about this before, it means that you are superimposing your idea on something that is mundane and you are performing it as a part of worship. The process of yajna is one such upasana. When you go out and do seva, it is a part of upasana. There is a person who is hungry, who is poor in front of you, but you are trying to see your God in that person. You are superimposing your idea of God in that person. So that becomes a path of upasana, right? So bhakti is only one of the many paths that are available. So Krishna says in the 15th shloka, Cha api anye yajnatah maham upasate. Even those that perform other types of worship, worship me alone. How is that? Ekatvena prathaktvena bahudha Vishvato Mukham. Because I am the one who is also the many, who can be reached in many ways, because it is me who faces in all directions. Right? A very beautiful description of the Lord. Ekatvena prathaktvena bahudha Vishvato Mukham. The Lord faces in all directions. You might reach Him from any direction, from the north, from the south. You will be reaching the same Lord because He is Vishvato Mukham. And because He can be reached from all directions, He is Bahudha. He is one who can be reached by many ways. And why is He Bahudha? Why is He having that? Why are we able to say that He is Vishvato Mukham? Because He is Ekatvena. He is one, but at the same time, Prataktvena. He is the many too. So that is the beautiful description that Krishna gives in the 15th verse. The 16th verse is a continuation of that, because Krishna has made a mention that all types of people who perform all kinds of worship reach me. He specifically mentions one type, which is the jnana yajna, that is people who try to worship the Lord through study and contemplation of scriptural truths. That is what is referred to as jnana yajna, specifically when we're talking about worship. So he mentions jnana yajna. He is going to mention other types of worship, not much in detail, but he is going to mention other types of worship, but more importantly, tell us how should we perceive all kinds of worships. So we will proceed to the next verse, the 16th verse. We will listen to it, as always, in the voice of Brother Shyam, one of our alumnus, who has very kindly given his voice and time for the shlokas. He's rendered them and he's given it to us. We will listen to the 16th shloka in his voice. I'll give you a brief meaning of that, and then we will discuss in detail what Krishna says in that shloka.
Aham kraturaham yajnyah swadhahamaham aushadham mantrohamaham evajyam aham agniraham hutam.
I am the oblation, the sacrifice and the worship. I am the fuel and the chant. I am the butter offered to the fire. I am the fire itself. And I am the act of offering. So that's the 16th verse. A very beautiful verse. The next few verses also are going to speak are about Krishna speaking about Himself. And you'd have made out that this shloka is very similar to a shloka that we have come across earlier, a shloka that we are very familiar with, which is the Brahmarpanam shloka. and we had discussed it that when we were going through the fourth chapter where it appears. But there is one key difference that I made a mention of a couple of weeks back, and I also hinted at just a couple of seconds ago. In that portion, Krishna had said, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavihi. The ladle is Brahman, the ghee is Brahman, so on and so forth. Here Krishna says, Aham. I am this, I am that, I am everything. So Krishna is almost entirely speaking as Ishvara now. He is not saying that all of this is Brahman, it is the Lord, he is saying it is me. So I think probably you could conclude that in this conversation between Lord Krishna and Arjuna, Krishna is probably saying that Arjuna is now comfortable with this idea of looking at Krishna as the Supreme Lord. And Krishna does not, because we saw that earlier at one point when Krishna said that I am eternal, Arjuna was surprised. He said, I know you as being these many years old. How is it that you taught this knowledge to the sun god and sun god taught it to so many others? He was not mentally prepared to accept Krishna as Ishvara, not accept Krishna as Ishvara, but to visualize him and to grasp what Krishna is saying, imagining himself to be that Supreme Lord. Probably Krishna is feeling that now Arjuna is prepared to see him in that manner. That is why he is completely speaking in first person now by saying, Aham, I am all this, I am everything that you see. The context of the shloka is also quite similar to that of the Brahmarpanam shloka. If you recall there, when we discussed that shloka, Krishna spoke about yajnas in general, how all karmas should be performed as a yajna, as a ritualistic sacrifice, a topic that he has been speaking of since the third chapter, because it was in the third chapter when Krishna said that he who performs all his actions as a yajna is not bound by those actions, right? So that's why he introduces the idea of a yajna. And then in the fourth chapter, he carries that forward. He speaks of how, what is a yajna for a jnani, right? That is the context where Brahmarpanam shloka comes. A jnani sees everything as Brahman. And the idea behind giving the description, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavi, Brahmagnav, the fire is Brahman, the offering is Brahman, the Havi is Brahman, the process is Brahman, the goal that you reach at the end of it is Brahman. The whole idea of giving this description is, those who perform karmas as a form of worship must eventually raise their perspective to that of a jnani through the process of seeing their actions as a yajna. Here Krishna made a very important statement in the previous shloka, which I said can be seen in two ways when we were discussing the shloka last week. One, he says that jnana yajnena cha api anye yajnanto mam upasate. Even those others who worship through yajnas such as jnana yajnas worship only me. And then he said, Vishvato mukham. I am the one with faces on all sides. So it could mean that in this shloka, Krishna is explaining how all worship comes to him. Jnana yajna and other yajnas, Krishna had said, reach me. How is it that all worships reach him? Or this shloka could be like the Brahmarpanam shloka, where Krishna is saying how a jnani perceives a yajna. How somebody who is performing a jnana yajna, how does he look at any other yajna? Whatever be the perspective, the instruction and the assurance that Krishna is giving is the same. What is the assurance? All worship reaches me. And what is the instruction? You must look at all worship in this manner. What is that manner? That is what Krishna is explaining in this particular verse. Once again, Krishna is giving an assurance and an instruction. The assurance is all worship reaches him alone. And the instruction is you must look at all worship in this manner in which Krishna is describing in the shloka and even the next one. So he says, Aham kratuhu, I am the sacrifice. Aham yajnaha, I am the yajna. What is the difference between kratuhu and yajnaha? Because if we translate yajna, we translate that also as sacrifice. So if kratuhu is sacrifice and yajna is also sacrifice, why is Krishna mentioning both of them? The word yajna stands for a larger concept. That's why we use the word jnana yajna, right? We used it even for the process of eating. That's how we bring in brahmarpanam. Or even one's profession can be performed as a yajna. Swami speaks of the five yajnas a householder performs. Taking care of elders is in yajna. Taking care of other beings is in yajna. Taking care of sannyasis or people who have given up hearth and home, that is also a yajna. So any form of worship can be called a yajna. Kratuhu is a very specific ritualistic form of fire sacrifice. There are some strict scriptural rules to be followed when you perform a yajna or a homam in a certain process, right? You light a fire, you call certain ritviks, certain kind of mantras are chanted, certain kind of offerings are made. That is a ritual, right? So when you say yajna and kratu, it means the kratu is referring to the ritualistic process which is done by certain people in a certain way. Yajna represents any kind of worship. So he says, Aham kratuhu, aham yajnaha. I am the ritualistic sacrifice. I am all kinds of worship. Swadha aham. I am the offering to pitrus or ancestors. Swadha. In a ritualistic sacrifice, right? Or when you do certain oblations or worship that is meant to make offerings to your ancestors, is always this process of putting aside a ball of rice. That is referred to as a swadha. In a more general sense, it could refer to any offering that you make to any deity. Even when you're performing a yajna, sometimes they offer food into it in a certain way. Or they keep aside these balls of rice or grains in the part of the process. That is referred to as swadha. And it's a very important component of some of these ritualistic worships. So Krishna says, swadha aham. I am the offering that you make in the form of these balls of rice or balls of grains. And then he says, aham aushadham. I am the aushadham. Aushadham is that which is got from Oshadhi. And Oshadhi means plants and herbs. So literally, Aushadham is often used to mean medicines. In general usage, even in some of the other languages that are derived from Sanskrit, Aushadha means medicine. But going by this root, Aushadham means food, because food is got from plants and herbs. So aushadham means food in general. And food is a very important part of any worship that is performed. It could be a worship where you offer food to God in the sanctum, or it could be an annadanam, a food distribution to the poor that you do. That is also a form of yajna, as I just mentioned. Or simply it could be the food that becomes prasadam at the end of the worship. And in many ritualistic fire sacrifices too, there is this part of the prayer, part of the process where you actually offer cooked food in the fire. A sight that we had the opportunity to witness when the Chandi Homam was performed in Swami's presence when Swami was in Vrindavan, I think in the early 2000s. We saw how they were literally offering food in the form of Chitrannam or Chakrapungal into that fire. So that is an important component. So what Krishna is doing here is, he is referring to all the components that are involved in any form of ritualistic worship. And what is the other important component of any such worship? Mantraha aham. I am the mantra that is chanted. It is not complete without these incantations. So Krishna says, I am that mantra as well. Aham eva ajyam. I am also the ghee. The other important component of a ritualistic fire sacrifice is ghee or clarified butter, which is offered into the fire. Again, for those who are familiar with the process, you know that that is one of the most important things. All you have to do is see the Dashara Yagnam that happens year after year. What are those priests who are sitting in front of the fire offering with every chant? They chant a mantra and they pour the ghee into the fire. Krishna says, mantra ha aham, aham eva ajyam. I am the mantra that is chanted. I am also the ghee that is offered. Not that alone. He says, aham agnihi. I am the fire into which this ajyam is poured. Aham hutam. I am the offering. Any other offering that is made into this fire, I am that. He says, mantraha aham, aham eva ajyam, aham agnihi, aham hutam. Hutam means this entire process too, right? Sometimes this entire process of making an offering in this form by chanting some mantras, pouring some ghee, is also referred to as hutam. So it could also mean Krishna is saying that this whole process, I am that. Very similar to Brahmarpanam. Arpanam is the process of offering. Krishna says, I am that process of offering itself, the whole act of offering. And we discussed the significance of statements such as this when we discussed the Brahmarpanam shloka itself. Why should Krishna say this? The moment he says, I am everything, all this came from me, all this will again merge in me, and in truth, they are not separate at all. Krishna makes the statement, isn't this statement all-encompassing? Does he have to say, I am aham mutam, aham agnihi, aham mantra, you know, I am this, I am that? Is it necessary for Krishna to reiterate, break up things and say that I am this also, I am that also? He very clearly said, the moving and the unmoving all came from me, all are in me, then why this breakup at all? It is because this information that Brahman is everything is only an information to us, right? It is not knowledge, it is not jnana, it is only a piece of data that we have got, a piece of information that has been given to us. And what we are trying to do is, we are trying to sanctify our lives using this information that has been given to us. Krishna is not telling, don't worship, don't do puja, don't do sacrifice. But even as you do that, try to bring in this idea that what you offer is also God, who receives is also God, the process is also God. Something that we have seen is the understanding that Vedanta is trying to push us. In bhakti, the bhakta, bhagwan and bhakti, all three have to merge. In dhyana, the dhyata, the dhyeya and dhyana, the process, all three have to merge. So too in worship, the one who offers the worship, one who receives the worship and the process of worship has to merge. Right, so this is the unified idea that Vedanta is drawing us to. So Krishna is not telling, don't worship me in this form, don't do sacrifices, don't do offerings like this, but don't get stuck up in that. You must raise yourself to understand what Krishna has been saying in the shloka. Swami didn't say you are Brahman, you don't have to eat. He said, remember that the food that you eat is also Brahman. The digestive fire in you, which is digesting the food, is also Brahman. The energy that comes from the food is also Brahman. When we are still in the realm of karma, the process of eating is different from the process of running, the process of excreting, the process of doing something else. Right? That is why we are in the realm of karma. When we are in that state, statements such as these, what we heard in this shloka, what we hear in the Brahmarpanam shloka, what we're going to hear in the next few shlokas, help us to convert karma into upasana. That is why Krishna is breaking this up in this manner. That is, make simple actions into acts of worship. And this process will lead you to jnana. Karma should be made into upasana, and that will lead you to jnana. If you remember, I had read out a quote when we were talking about the Brahmarpanam shloka, where Swami says this very thing. The Veda is separated into karma kanda, upasana kanda, and jnana kanda, so that we start with karma, convert it into upasana, and then reach towards jnana. So that is why Krishna is breaking up all this. I'm not going into everything that I told in the Brahmarpanam episode. In case you wish to listen to it again, it's episode number 58. So if you want to go back and listen to that, that is the episode number for you. And if you want to listen to that quote of Swami too. Before we move on, maybe let us see how we can make probably this, whatever I said now, whatever we heard in that shloka, a little more practically accessible to us in everyday life. How am I going to think of this? Let us say that you are a singer or you possess some talent. So how do you turn this talent into a form of worship? When you perform, when you sing, you do it with the idea that I am offering this song to God, right? That is how it simply becomes worship. When you do that, that is what we refer to as upasana, the first step of worship. Let us say you're a professional singer. Let us say you are, you get paid for singing. So from the worldly point of view, you're a professional, you are singing, you're getting paid. But in your mind, when you say that, Swami, I am offering this concert to you, you are superimposing this idea that I am performing for you on top of a worldly profession, and that makes it an upasana, something that we've been telling over and over again. So that is how you convert normal karma into upasana. Even as you do this, what Krishna is saying in these shlokas, what Swami is trying to drive to us is, slowly contemplate on the truth. Where does this talent come from? What is the source of this talent? And when you think deeply, you will yourself come to the conclusion that this talent comes from God. Think a little more deeply, and Swami says you will understand, talent is not a gift from God, talent is God. A small episode that one of the old students were once narrating. I'm not getting the exact conversation that happened. I think it was during one of the first few years of MBA entrance exams, and they were going about the process of, what should be the process of admission? Should you have an exam? Should you have an interview? Should you have both? And eventually they came up with this idea of having an entrance exam followed by a group discussion and then a one-to-one interview. And they were having this conversation with Swami about how the students are being inducted into the process. And in the course of that conversation, there was this thought that somebody had shared, saying that Swami, and I'll just get the exact words which Swami said, when the student, when they asked a question in their selection based on merit or grace, whether the students are being inducted into Swami's course on the basis of merit or grace. Right? They ask Swami, if somebody is able to clear the exam and then do well in the interview and get into Swami's college, Swami, is it because of their merit or is it because of their grace? And what Swami said was very beautiful. He said, isn't merit also grace? We all have become students of Swami's college. We might think that I did well in my entrance exam. I answered the questions very well in the interview, or somebody who has done very well in any exam. So you might say that my merit has got me into this college. Swami said, don't forget that even merit is a form of grace. So when you contemplate deep enough, you will realize that the talent which is there in us is not only a gift of God, the talent is itself an expression of the divinity within. And when that realization comes, your attitude towards that talent will change. You will come to the understanding that the talent is God. The song, which is a form of that talent, is also divine. The attitude towards the offering will completely change. And with further contemplation, the understanding that the singer is also God, the listener is also God, this whole process is also God, right? So the whole idea of these shlokas, especially shlokas such as this, is to slowly raise simple worship to a jnana yajna, a simple material worship, right? If I sit in front of a picture of Swami and offer flowers or cook some food and offer it to Swami, it is a material form of worship. Yes, there is devotion. Yes, it has become a form of upasana. But you raise that worship into the realm of a jnana yajna, where you give up the apara vidya and you receive para vidya in return. So that is the 16th shloka. We'll go to the next shloka, the 17th shloka. We'll listen to it and then I'll give you a brief meaning, after which we'll discuss about it.
Pita hamasya jagato mata dhata pita mahaha vedyam pavit त्रमोंकार ऋक्सामयजुरेवच.
Of this world I am the father, the mother, the ordainer and the grandfather. I am the knowable, the sanctifier, the syllable om, as also Rig, Sama and Yaju. That's the 17th verse of the 9th chapter. Krishna carries forward with the description he started in the previous shloka by saying how he is everything in this world. So now he has gone beyond just a description of worship. He says everything in this world that you interact with is me. It is also going to continue in the next few shlokas as well. He says, Pita aham asya jagato mata. I am the mother and the father of this world. This is a reiteration of what was said in the previous chapters. Both the para prakriti and the apara prakriti are the Lord Himself. Para prakriti is the supreme state of Akshara Brahma, the unmanifest divine. That is like the father. The apara prakriti is the nature that gives rise to everything in the world, and that is like the mother of the entire universe. Then Krishna states, when Krishna states, Pita aham asya jagato mata, I am the father, I am also the mother, there is no second entity. The God, the Brahman is not having to work with another entity to produce this creation. He says, I am the mother as well as I am the father. Then he goes on to say, Dhata Pitamahaha. Krishna says, I am also the grandfather. Dhata means the one who is the ordainer. Pitamaha, I am the one who is the grandfather. Dhata means the dispenser of the fruits of actions, the ordainer who rewards and punishes. Pitamaha, why is he saying I am the grandfather? It means, If you ask the question, if he is the mother and father, who created him? Is there somebody who created the Lord himself? He says, no, I am the father, mother, I am also the grandfather. There is no one superior to me. There is no one who has created me. Then he says, Vedyam, the thing to be known or the knowable. We had discussed this concept of thirst for knowledge as one of the fundamental qualities that is in us, which Swami says is referred to as bhati in the five aspects that define an individual. Asti, bhati, priyam, rupa and nama. In that, bhati refers to this thirst for knowledge, which is also, Swami said, relatable to the chit aspect of sat, chit, ananda. The thirst to know is what drives life. We always want to know about life. We always want to know about the world, about things happening around us. Some may be more curious than the others, but no one can say this knowledge seeking has completely stopped. Because if it is stopped, there is no growth, there is no movement, there is no life. So this bhati, this desire to know, is coming from the fact that you are already all-knowing. The chit aspect is what is reflected as bhati in the jivatma. So when Krishna says, vedyam aham, vedyam, it means I am the ultimate knowable. Only after knowing him, this desire to know truly comes to an end. Because he is that which when known, all is known, nothing more is there to be known. So that is why he is the Vedyam, the ultimate knowable. Then he says, Pavitram, the purifier. Again, we have discussed why the Lord is the purifier. Vedyam Pavitram, the knowable, that is the purifier. You know him, then you know yourself. And when you know yourself, you know that no sin, no merit can stick on you. And that is the ultimate form of purification, ultimate way by which you are purified. Omkaraha, I am Omkara. Once again, Krishna states that he is Omkara. Maybe the third or fourth time till the ninth chapter that Krishna is making this assertion that he is Omkara. Finally, he says, Rik Sama Yajuhu Evacha. And also, I am the Rig, Yajur, and Sama. He is all the Vedas. Another meaning of this, for this statement, is based on the classifications of lineages. If you look at it in India, in Bharat, traditionally, there are many family lines that take up the study of one particular Veda or one small section of the Vedas. That is why you have different kinds of people following different traditions. Some will be from the lineage of Samaveda, some will be from the lineage of Rig Veda, some will be Krishna Yajur Veda or Shukla Yajur Veda, different various sections. One of the reasons why it was done is to ensure that all these various sections of the Vedas are passed on from generation to generation. It is impossible for any one person or one family to learn all of these and pass it on to the next generation. So it is split up in this manner. So there are different family lines that use different sections of the Vedas to propitiate the Lord. So when Krishna says that I am the Rig, Yajur and Sama, it also means worshipping me through any of this, you reach only me. There is no different deity for different Vedas or different sections of Vedas. Through this process of worship, you reach only me. Because that is also in consistency with what Krishna said in the previous shloka. Because when he said that all forms of worship reach me, it is quite natural for us to think that here also Krishna is making a reference to certain forms of worship. So that is the 17th shloka. We'll probably go to the 18th shloka. We will listen to that also and then we will discuss. Because what Krishna is conveying in all these shlokas, the idea is very similar. As I said, it is an assurance and it is an instruction that I am everything, everything reaches me, and remember to see me as everything. So we'll go to the next shloka, the 18th shloka of the 9th chapter.
Gatir bharta prabhu sakshi nivasa sharanam suhrut prabhava pralayasthanam nidhanam bijam avyayam.
I am the fruit of actions, the nourisher, the Lord, witness, abode, refuge, friend, origin, end, foundation, store, and the imperishable seed. That's the 18th verse. As I said, Krishna continues in the same tone of Ishvara, reminding Arjuna that there is only one Lord, and a host of things, a list of things that Krishna mentions in that shloka. He says, Gatihi, I am the goal. We've spoken extensively about this word Gati a few weeks back. It stands for multiple things. It means the pace of progress, the path, the destination, the co-pilgrim, everything is covered in this Gati. But here in this point, it is used as the final destination, the last point in any journey. Till you reach Him, the journey doesn't end. So He is the Gati, the final destination in this journey. Bharta, the provider. The word Bharta is also used for husband. Traditionally, the husband or the man of the house is considered to be the provider, the breadwinner for the family. So he is called Bharta. Bharta means the provider. That's why the husband was called Bharta. And we all know that somebody being the source of or the provider for the family can be the source of ego and source of arrogance. I provide for my family. You know, I have given you a good education. I have brought you up and I have fed you and clothed you, right? The quintessential male ego comes from the fact that traditionally they have been breadwinners. In the modern context, it could even be a mother or a daughter or a son, right? If you start earning and you start providing for the family, there is no gender for ego and arrogance. It can come for anyone. So when one is in a position of providing for the family or taking care of another, one feels that I am the Bharta, I am the provider. But the truth is, we are only taking from one place and giving it to another. As a mother, as a father, we are only taking from this side and giving it in the other side. We are only instruments, we are only conduits. There is only one provider, and that is God. That is why Krishna says, Prabhu, the Lord. He is the final authority, He is the final one you turn to. Bharta, Prabhu, I am the provider, and I am the Lord. Then Krishna says, Sakshi, the witness. Again, as soon as he says, I am the provider, I am the sustainer, Krishna immediately adds the word that negates doership. I walk down the road and I see a starving child, or I see a person who is very poor, who is not clothed well. If God is the provider, isn't He then making the child starve? Isn't He the one who is causing somebody to be in poverty? Krishna says, Sakshi. No, I am only a witness. Your karmas and the consequences of your actions play out. I only stand there and witness. It also conveys another meaning. When he says, I am Sakshi, it also means he witnesses all. Nothing escapes his eyes. Good, bad, sin, merit, all of that is witnessed by the Lord. There is no place in this whole world where you can go and do something and say, no one knows about it. Because He always knows, because He is the Sakshi. So He says, Bharta, Prabhu, Sakshi. I am the provider, I am the Lord. I am just the witness to whatever pans out in this world. Then He says, Nivasaha, the abode. Krishna had said, like the great wind that moves everywhere, still moves only within the space. All beings exist in me, he said. You could be a globetrotter living today in India. Next year you might be living in the USA. Later you might settle in Japan. Or you may have a house in every big city in the world. But all your places are on earth. The earth itself is in the galaxy. The galaxy is in the universe, and this entire universe is a small part within Him. He is Nivasaha. He is the abode of everything. there's a very popular children's book called Houghton Hears a Who. Many of you may be very familiar with it because it was also made into an animation movie, Houghton Hears a Who. The story is about a huge town called Whoville. The residents in that town, you know, they go about like any other place. They think there's a small town in a large planet. And later they figure out that their entire planet is just a small speck in a huge jungle. And there are beings that are much, much larger than that. The reason I'm making a reference to that is some of the scenes in that movie, animation movie, children's movie or the book, seems very comical. But it's very interesting. When you look at it, that's the nature we are all in. When you picture yourself living in a speck like that, you will realize how really silly it is to fight over land and property or to think no end of ourselves because we own a house, we own a land. However big the house is, it is on this planet, which is itself a tiny, tiny speck on this universe, which we have come to measure, right? We've, within our own scientific understanding of the size of the universe, the planet is a tiny, tiny speck. No one really knows how much vaster the universe really is. And this entire universe is in the Lord. He is Nivasaha. That's why these are all concepts which, when constantly reminded, automatically that sattvic nature that Krishna spoke about as saying that, you know, devim prakritim ashritaha, you will be able to internalize that devim prakritim. That happens when you remind yourself of all these truths that Krishna is saying here. When you say that he is the provider, you will never have, you will never give yourself up to ego when you are the provider. You will say that the Lord gives and I'm only passing it on to you. I'm only a votary. I'm only a conduit, right? Similarly, you might own the whole White House, but you know that it is nothing. The Supreme Lord is the one in whom this entire universe resides. He is the Vishwagarbha. The entire universe is nothing but a fetus in his womb. He is Nivasaha. Then he says, Sharanam. I am the refuge. Again, we may look upon many individuals as our refuge as we go through the course of life. But he is that refuge when we turn to whom we don't need to turn to anyone else. Let's say today I have chest pain. I go to a doctor, a very good cardiologist, a specialist, and I seek his help. And in the course of my visits to the doctor, let's say I become a very good friend of his. We become very close. And then he might say, you know what, you become a very good friend of mine. Henceforth, any problem, you don't have to wait in the line. You just directly give me a call and you come off to my clinic. And then he says that you don't have to wait. In fact, you don't have to pay me anything. I'm not going to charge you because you become such a good friend. But tomorrow, I fall down and break my leg. I can't go to the same doctor. I will have to seek refuge in another doctor, and same is the case with any other problem that comes. No one is the ultimate refuge. Everybody can help us only to a certain extent. But the Lord alone can be spoken of as Sharanam, the ultimate refuge. When you turn to Him, you don't have to turn to anybody else in your life. Then Krishna says, Suhrit, the friend. We have come across this word twice already in the Gita. This is probably the third time it is appearing, if I'm not wrong. It means well-wisher. Whatever I do for you, I do the best that is for you. He had said this in the fifth chapter, Suhridam sarvabhutanam. I am the well-wisher of all beings. As Swami would say, to remember this, that whatever Swami lets to happen in my life is best for me, is itself a tool for perfect surrender. Because he is Suhrit, the one who is all the time only promoting our welfare. Whatever he does, whatever he gives, whatever he refuses to give, he is only promoting our welfare. He is Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam. There is a beautiful statement in the Old Testament which says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and the future." The Lord only benefits through his actions and plans. That is why he says, "I am Suhrit." Don't look at me as somebody who is mean, who is punishing, who is cruel. I am always a Suhrit. Whatever I do it with an eye on your welfare. It also means anyone who does good to you, remember that that good is coming to you from the Lord through that person. Right? Even as we go through life, many people benefit us. Many people are our well-wishers. Remember that goodness is coming to us from God through them. Then finally he says, Prabhavaha Pralayaha Sthanam. I am the Prabhavaha, the origin of everything. I am the Pralayaha, the dissolution, and Sthanam, the foundation on which everything subsists. There is no Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. They are only different names and forms attributed to the same Supreme Lord. He is the source of Shrishti, Sthiti and Laya, creation, sustenance and dissolution. That's why he says, Prabhavaha, Pralayaha, Sthanam. I am the origin of everything. I am the dissolution of everything. And everything stays because of me. Then he says, Nidhanam, Bijam Avyayam. Nidhanam means a storehouse or a treasure house. In this case, it is that which stores all this multitude of beings, moving, non-moving, emotions, karmas, consequences. When a person dreams, all the variety in that dream is contained within the mind of that one person, isn't it? It's not anywhere else. You might dream an entire city, but the entire city with all its citizens are within this one person. In the same way, this entire illusion of multiplicity is stored within the Lord, Nidhanam. That also makes him Bijam, the seed. When he is the Sakshi, the witness, when he is the Bharta, the provider or the ordainer, he is the one who dispenses one's destiny. That makes him the seed for all variety and diversity that is seen. But immediately Krishna adds another word. He says, Bijam Avyayam. I am the seed, but I am Avyayam. The word which keeps repeating again and again, I am unchanging. A regular seed has to undergo modification to produce the plant. When you finally have a plant or a tree from that seed, the seed is completely gone. It is not there anymore to be identified as a seed. Similar is the case with an egg. An egg has to break and lose its form and presence for life to emerge from there. But when the Lord says, I am Bijam, he is not that kind of a seed. He says, I am Bijam Avyayam. I am that cause which remains unchanged through all this process. So that is the 18th verse. I think we have enough time to go to the next verse. We will listen to that also, the 19th verse. We will discuss about that and we'll conclude this week's episode with that.
Tapamyahamaham varsham nigrunham yutsrujamicha amrutanchaiva mrityuscha sadasaschaham arjuna.
O Arjuna, I give heat, I withhold and pour down rain. I am verily the nectar and also death, existence and non-existence. The 19th verse of the 9th chapter, another beautiful shloka where Krishna describes God, describes himself. Some of these shlokas are for the sheer joy of contemplation, in my opinion. Now, had we gone up to Swami and asked him, Swami, who are you? Swami could have well reeled out some of these shlokas one after the other. We still may not have been able to comprehend his true nature. That's a different point altogether. But these are descriptions of the Lord. If you were to look at the Lord and ask him, who are you? He might as well answer in these verses. Krishna says here, Tapami, I give heat or I give warmth. In science, we often read how life as we know it is possible on this earth because the earth is in that precise distance from the sun. Our teachers would tell us, had it been a little closer to the sun, the planet would have been too hot for life. Had it been a little further away, then it would have been too cold and that would have made it inhospitable. So it is exactly in that precise distance from the sun that ensures that life can be possible. So warmth or that right temperature is so critical. And Krishna says, Tapami, I am that heat that warms up this world just enough so that life can be possible. Without warmth, there is another important process which will not be possible. That is evaporation and precipitation. Krishna mentions that in the next part of the shloka. He says, Varsham nighnami utsrajami cha. Nighnami means to withhold. Utsrajami to means to send forth. Varsham nighnami utsrajami. I withhold the rain and also send it forth. I am the heat and I am the cycle of rain. Which in essence means, I am the one who is the source of all seasons, right? So he says, I am the one that heats up this world. I am the one that causes the rain to shower. I am also the one who withholds the rain. Something that we've had the opportunity to witness so many times in Swami's presence, right? I could probably give you any number of examples where Swami has showed how he had complete power over rain in that sense. As one of our old students was once narrating, Swami had come for darshan. It was during the rainy season. It was pouring cats and dogs that day. So most of the students somehow tried to squeeze into the portico and they were all sitting in the cover. And the devotees too had taken shelter under those different sheds. But whenever they would sight Swami, Swami would be in the interview room. The moment Swami would come out, they all will come and sit in the sands even though it was pouring rain, right? So Swami would come out and Swami would tell them, no, go back, you know, into the shade, don't sit in the rain. But then nobody was willing to listen to Swami because they wanted to show Swami how keen they were to have Swami's darshan. So Swami looked at these students and Swami said, pichi, pichi, all of them are mad, they're sitting in the rain. And then there was a glint in Swami's eye. Suddenly Swami had a mischievous smile on his face and Swami said, boys, will you see one tamasha today? Shall I show you on tamasha? Shall I show you something very interesting? Then all the children were excited. Then Swami said, okay, see now, I will step out of this portico to give darshan. The moment I step out, Swami said, the rain will stop. Then I will go around, give darshan to the devotees. The moment I step back into the portico, you will find that it starts raining again. Swami said this and the kids were very excited. And just as Swami said, he just put his feet down from the portico and as though somebody had turned the tap off, the rain stopped. Then Swami went, you know, from lady's side, the jinn side, and Swami picked up so many letters and they were all sitting in the rain. So Swami came back to that same place where he had made the statement saying that I will show you a tamasha. When Swami came back, he had letters in both his hands. And it was quite some time, maybe 20 minutes. Then Swami came back and Swami said, boys, are you ready now? And then they remembered again that yes, Swami had told that, you know, not only he'll stop the rain, but he'll also make it rain. And they were all very eager and they're looking at Swami. And the student who was narrating this to us said that literally Swami jumped up one step into the portico, like a child. He just jumped up into the portico. And as though somebody had turned on the tap, the whole place was again, pouring cats and dogs with rain. So when he says, I am the one that holds the rain, I am the one that makes it shower, we're all so fortunate that any number of such episodes we have heard of, we've seen, we've been a witness of, where Swami has literally been the one who is in complete control over all of these elements. Then he goes on to say, Amritam cha eva mrityu cha. I am the immortality and I am death too. When you attain immortality, you attain the Lord. But that doesn't mean death comes from a different source. He is death too. All these are meant to explain to us the true nature of God. And apart from that, also in a more practical sense, or in the more immediate present, all these statements must lead us to equanimity, right? As you've seen many times in the Gita already, the two flaws of the mind that we have to conquer are raga and dvesha, like or strong likes and hatred or aversions. We look upon something as being very pleasant and unacceptable, and something else as being very unpleasant and avoidable. And this is what causes fear, sorrow, anger, jealousy, and everything comes from raga and dvesha. So one of the ways of slowly subduing this raga and dvesha is to understand and contemplate on this truth that everything is God. Health is God, death is God, birth is God, decay is God. When it rains, it is God. When there is a drought, it is God. When there is a hurricane, it is God. When there is a crisp morning sunshine, it is God. So the shlokas and the concepts in the shlokas are meant for contemplation, and when contemplated upon, will give us equanimity. Finally, he says in the shloka, Sat asat cha aham Arjuna. I am existence and non-existence, O Arjuna. Generally, we translate Sat as being truth, Brahman, and Asat as being untruth, the creation. But in this shloka, most of the commentators, starting from Adi Shankaracharya, translate Sat as the manifest world, the effect, and Asat as the unmanifest Brahman, which is the cause. It appears a bit weird to call Brahman as Asat or untruth, but here Sat is used as manifest and Asat as unmanifest. The reason for this, apparently, this entire line, Amritam cha eva mrityu cha, Sat asat cha aham, is from a very similar statement that appears in the Nasadiya Suktam. And there, Sat and Asat is used with the meaning that one is, the Sat is the manifest world and Asat is the unmanifest. So that is why this particular place, Sat and Asat, is translated in the opposite way. Well, whatever be the meaning it is used in, the point is Krishna is saying, I am the unseen unmanifest cause as well as the seen manifest effect. So that is the essence of what Krishna says in this statement. So I think we will conclude with that. So we've completed 19 verses. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet, and I thank all of you for your company. And if you have any thoughts to share with me, you know our WhatsApp number, you know our feedback email, or if you wish to write to me directly, you can write to prem@ssmediacenter.org. I'll meet you all next week at 10 a.m. We are still not sure of the program schedule for the Asia stream. What we have been following in the past few months is when we have a special program in the video, we also have it on the radio. If that be the case, I will not be able to meet you next week. I will meet you the week after that. We don't have a live afternoon satsang this week too. I'm going to play part two of the satsang that we played last week. So that will be at 12 p.m. So I will meet you whenever Swami wills. Next time we should resume this pilgrimage. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu. Till I meet you next time, keep safe, take care. Jai Sai Ram.